23, Prigozhin has been murdered. Your final response, Professor Martin?
I think Russia has not been doing as well in Ukraine as it had originally hoped to do. I think we're seeing some new energy on behalf of the Ukrainians who are now launching their counteroffensive. And I think that all of this political infighting that is happening among security forces in Russia makes Russia weaker in the battlefield. So this certainly did nothing to strengthen Russia's invasion of Ukraine, and it appears that it has weakened Russia.
Kimberly Martin, I want to thank you for being with us, professor of political science at Barnard College, Columbia University. She's been researching and writing about the Wagner Group for years. Coming up, 8 Republican presidential candidates faced off in their first debate Wednesday night, but frontrunner Donald Trump refused to take part. He's turning himself in today to the Fulton County Jail to face charges for attempting to overturn the 2020 election in Georgia. Stay with us. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
We turn now to the first Republican presidential debate of the 2024 race. 8 candidates gathered in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, for a debate hosted by Fox News. But the Republican frontrunner, Donald Trump, refused to attend, opting to do a sit-down interview with former Fox host Tucker Carlson. Later today, Trump will turn himself in at the Fulton County Jail in Atlanta, Georgia, to face racketeering charges for running a criminal enterprise with 18 co-defendants to overturn the 2020 election in Georgia. 9 of his co-defendants have already turned themselves in, including former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani and Sidney Powell, who peddled pro-Trump election conspiracy theories.
Trump's indictments was one of the main issues, well, one of many issues, I won't say main, raised during the debate, which saw 8 candidates on stage. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, Trump's former Vice President Mike Pence, former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, former Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson, South Carolina Senator Tim Scott, former U.N. Ambassador Nikki Haley, also she was the South Carolina governor, the 38-year-old biotech entrepreneur Vivek Ramaswamy, and North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum. The Republican candidates were asked about Trump's indictment during the debate by Fox News moderators Martha McCallum and Brett Baer.
We are going to take a brief moment and talk about the elephant not in the room.
Former President Trump has been indicted in 4 different states on 91 counts. He will be processed tomorrow in Georgia at the Fulton County Jail for charges relating to the 2020 election loss.
You all signed a pledge to support the eventual Republican nominee. If former President Trump is convicted in a court of law, would you still support him as your party's choice? Please raise your hand if you would.
6 of the 8 candidates raised their hand.
Just hold on. So just to be clear, Governor Christie, you were kind of late to the game there, but
no,
you raised your hand?
No, I'm doing this. Look, look, I'm doing this.
And I know
this.
You didn't.
Whoa. No.
Here's
the bottom line. Someone's got to stop normalizing this conduct, okay? Now, whether or not you believe that the criminal charges are right or wrong, the conduct is beneath the office of President of the United States. And you know, this is the great thing about this country. Booing is allowed, but it doesn't change the truth. It doesn't change the truth.
Mr. Ramaswamy, you raise your hand supporting.
No, I'd like to get in and respond. Let's just speak the truth, okay? President Trump, I believe, was the best president of the 21st century. It's a fact. And Chris Christie, honest to God, your claim that Donald Trump is motivated by vengeance and grievance would be a lot more credible if your entire campaign were not based on vengeance and grievance against one man. And if people at home want to see a bunch of people blindly bashing Donald Trump without an iota of vision for this country, they could just change the channel to MSNBC right now. But I'm not running for president of MSNBC. I am running for president of the United States. We're skating on thin ice, and we cannot set a precedent where the party in power uses police force to indict its political opponents. It is wrong. We have to end the weaponization of justice in this country.
That was biotech entrepreneur Vivek Ramaswamy at last night's Republican presidential debate. He went on to question former Vice President Mike Pence.
Well, Mike, why don't you say this? Join me in making a commitment that on day one you would pardon Donald Trump. I'm the only candidate on the stage who had the courage to actually say it. That is how we move our nation forward.
I don't know
and
why
turn the
you
page
assume
forward.
That Donald
That's exactly
Trump
right.
will be convicted of these crimes.
You should be able to make a commitment, the same justice system that was this
that
corrupt.
That's the difference between you and me.
Yeah, I'm not a professional politician. That's the difference. Who can answer a question.
I've actually given pardons when I was governor of the state of Indiana. It usually follows a finding of guilt and contrition by the individual that's been convicted. So, if I'm president of the United States, we'll give fair consideration to any pardon request. But if I may.
Vice President Mike Pence went on to defend his actions on January 6, 2021.
Now look, I've made it clear. I had hoped that the issues surrounding the 2020 election and the controversies around January 6 had not come to this, had not come to criminal proceedings. I would rather they had been resolved by the American people and the American people alone. But no one's above the law, and President Trump is entitled to the presumption of innocence that every American is entitled to, and we will make sure and extend that to him. But the American people deserve to know that the president asked me, in his request that I reject or return votes unilaterally, power that no vice president in American history had ever exercised or taken, he asked me to put him over the Constitution. And I chose the Constitution, and I always will. I had no right to overturn the election, and Kamala Harris will have no right to overturn the election when we beat them in 2024.
Former Vice President Mike Pence at Wednesday's Republican debate in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. We're going now to Madison, Wisconsin, where we're joined by John Nichols, the nation's national affairs correspondent. His latest piece is The Party of the Big Lie and the Even Bigger Lie. You were in Milwaukee last night, John. Talk about the significance of this first Republican primary debate without the absolute front runner, so far ahead. He leaves everyone behind him. But then what took place as people clearly did not take Trump on when asked that key question, if convicted, would you support him? Six of the eight candidates did. Just lay out the scene for us.
Sure. The scene is defined by Donald Trump. And I think that what happened last night was further evidence that the Republican Party has become the party of Trump. So you have eight people on stage who all would like to be the Republican nominee. But in many senses, this was a gathering of the people who are almost certain not to be the Republican nominee. The polls in favor of Trump are overwhelming. He leads the next closest candidate, Ron DeSantis, by the better part of 40 points, and the others are generally in single digits. So what you ended up with here was a sort of surreal debate in which candidates went after one another quite aggressively. In fact, at several points, it was very chaotic. But in many senses, it was like an argument at the kids' table on Thanksgiving rather than a classic political debate. And you did see a lot of desperation on the part of these candidates to
you know, make their name, to use this moment to get at least into the public mind as the clear alternative to Trump. What was interesting is that while certainly Vivek Ramaswamy did quite well at that, I think he, you know, said many of the most outrageous things and the most aggressive things. And I think he came across as a very strong communicator. He often had the crowd on his side, although not always. But what was striking was, I think, a couple of other things. The desperation of Mike Pence. Pence seemed to, at every turn, be trying to, you know, hog the mic to get as much time as he could. But it never quite worked, and he was often called out by other candidates. Another notable thing was that Ron DeSantis really didn't define himself very well in this debate. He tended to repeat his, campaign trail punchlines and talking points, but he never really had a breakout moment. If there was a breakout moment for anybody, it might have been Nikki Haley dressing Ron DeSantis down for some of his statements on foreign policy. But at the end of the day, the reality was summed up by that question about Trump and whether they would, you know, support him. By and large, they said they would. In fact, in some cases, aggressively suggesting they would. And that created the sense here that these candidates are really divided into two camps. One, people who appear, in the case of Ramaswamy, as an example, to be trying to be Trump's vice presidential nominee, or at least might be interested in that prospect. And then another camp that seems to be trying to make its name for a post-Trump moment, and that would be especially Christie.
I want to go to Asa Hutchinson, and now he is way behind in the polls, the former Arkansas governor who is not supporting Trump. But he raised a very interesting issue that is being written about extensively by more and more conservative legal scholars. This is Hutchinson.
I did not raise my hand because there's an important issue we as a party have to face. And over a year ago, I said that Donald Trump was morally disqualified from being president again as a result of what happened on January 6th. More people are understanding the importance of that, including conservative legal scholars who says he may be disqualified under the 14th Amendment from being president again as a result of the insurrection. This is something that could disqualify him under our rules and under the Constitution. And so, obviously, I'm not going to support somebody who's been convicted of a serious felony or who is disqualified under our Constitution, and that's consistent with RNC rules.
So that's former Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson. You know, there were 4,000 people in the audience. You can hear him being roundly booed. Yeah. But you've written extensively about the 14th Amendment. Again, increasingly, conservative legal scholars are also writing about this. Explain.
Sure. The 14th Amendment, Section 3, which is a post-Civil War section, post-Civil War amendment, it deals with people who foment insurrection, people who swear an oath to the United States and then, in a position of power, take actions that might upend the government, might in some way cause a political crisis of the sort that we saw certainly during the Civil War and that many people believe we saw more recently with Trump's efforts to overturn the election. Certainly different actions by any measure, but yet at the end of the day, a failure to abide by an oath to follow the basic strictures of the Constitution. And the people who've been talking about 14.3 have generally been on the left, people like John Bonifaz and other constitutional lawyers who brought it up many times. But in recent months, you have seen conservative legal scholars and even some conservative activists bring this issue up. And it is a legitimate issue, a complex one, because the Constitution doesn't really lay out exactly how you enforce this standard. But the standard is that if someone swore an oath to the government, either encouraged or supported insurrection, and then seeks to return to government, that they can't do so, that they can't continue to hold an office. And there's a lot of interpretation in all sorts of ways on this. But as Asa Hutchinson pointed out, this is something that has been raised as a genuine concern as regards Trump. If he's convicted, it could become an even bigger concern, particularly if he's convicted in the Washington, D.C. case brought at the federal level by Jack Smith, or in the Georgia case, both of which talk about attempting to overturn an election.
And to be clear, so it would be individual secretaries of state who could say Trump is not going to be on our state ballot?
Theoretically, that's one way to do it. And certainly that's something that several groups, John Boniface's group and others, have raised as a possibility. There is also the possibility that Congress itself could take action and via resolution say that it is the determination of the Congress of the United States that Donald Trump is in violation of 14.3. I mean, there's several ways to go at this. No matter what happens, if it were to occur, if a Secretary of State were to bar Donald Trump from the ballot, you'd have a legal fight. There's very little question of that. And I think that what's significant with Asa Hutchinson bringing this up in the debate is that it brought this issue more to the forefront and I think opens up, hopefully, a broader discussion about the clear constitutional concerns as regards someone like Donald Trump seeking to return to the presidency.
Well, although Donald Trump, of course, who's the leading candidate, skipped the debate, he appeared instead in a pre-taped interview with former Fox News host Tucker Carlson on the social media platform X, formerly known as Twitter.
Do you think we're moving towards civil war?
There's tremendous passion and there's tremendous love. You know, January 6th was a very interesting day because they don't report it properly. I believe it was the largest crowd I've ever spoken before. And you know some of the crowds I've spoken before. And like July 4th on the Mall, I think they had 1 million people there. But I think that the biggest crowd I've ever spoken before was on January 6th. And people that were in that crowd, a very, very small group of people, and we said patriotically and peacefully, peacefully and patriotically, right? Nobody ever says that. Go peacefully and patriotically. But people that were in that crowd that day, very small group of people, went down there, and then there are a lot of scenarios that we can talk about. But people in that crowd said it was the most beautiful day they've ever experienced. There was love in that crowd. There was love and unity. I have never seen such spirit and such passion and such love. And I've also never seen simultaneously and from the same people such hatred of what they've done to our country.
So do you think it's possible that there's open conflict? We seem to be moving towards something.
I don't know, because I don't know what it, you know, I can say this. There's a level of passion that I've never seen. There's a level of hatred that I've never seen, and that's probably a bad combination.
So, John Nichols, your response to Trump's comments to fired Fox News host Tucker Carlson, also the fact what he said, Vivek Ramaswamy mimicked his line, which is he said, America is an internal sort of cold cultural civil war. Last night, he said.
Yeah. Well, I was in Madison, Wisconsin on January 6th, and so I can't attest to what Donald Trump thinks he saw. But my sense of what occurred on that day is very, very different than his. And I think that the same goes for committees that have investigated it and others. And so Trump is clearly putting his spin on this. But the most troubling thing is that he is suggesting that there is a possibility for additional violence. And that is a deeply unsettling statement by a former president, the front runner in a presidential race. And it also does, as you suggest, parallel what some of the candidates are saying, especially Ramaswamy, who has, you know, did indeed in the debate suggest a very dark vision of America. In fact, he explicitly rejected Ronald Reagan's Morning in America statement from back in the 1980s and argued that things are actually pretty awful and potentially could get worse. So you really do have a split from the Republican Party of the past to a party that is much more, for lack of a better term, combative.
At last night's debate in Milwaukee, Republican presidential candidates were also asked about the climate crisis. This was on a day when the heat in Milwaukee forced the closing of the Milwaukee schools. During the debate, Fox News played a question from Alexander Diaz, a student at Catholic University of America.
Polls consistently show that young people's number one issue is climate change. How will you, as both President of the United States and leader of the Republican Party, calm their fears that the Republican Party doesn't care about climate change?
So we want to start on this with a show of hands. Do you believe in human behavior is causing climate change? Raise your hand if you do.
Well, look, we're not school children. Let's have the debate. I mean, I'm happy to take it to start. Alexander, so do you want to raise your hand or not? I don't think that's the way to do. So let me just say to Alexander this. First of all, one of the reasons our country's decline is because of the way the corporate media treats Republicans versus Democrats. Biden was on the beach while those people were suffering. He was asked about it. He said, no comment. Are you kidding me? As somebody that's handled disasters in Florida, you got to be activated. You've got to be there. You've got to be present. You've got to be helping people who are doing this. And here's the deal.
Let's just answer the question.
Is that a yes? Or is that a yes? Is that a hand raise?
You do not.
I think it was a hand raise for him, and it's my hands are in my pockets. Let us be honest as Republicans. I'm the only person on the stage who isn't bought and paid for, so I can say this. The climate change agenda is a hoax. The climate change agenda is a hoax. And we have to declare independence for it. And the reality is, the anti-carbon agenda is the wet blanket on our economy. And so the reality is, more people are dying of bad climate change policies than they are of actual climate change.
Governor Haley, are you bought and paid for?
Is down by 98%
in the last century.
I've had enough already tonight of a guy who sounds like ChatGPT standing up here.
That's Chris Christie.
And the last person in one of these debates, Brett, who stood in the middle of the stage and said, what's a skinny guy with an odd last name doing up here, was Barack Obama, and I'm afraid we're dealing with the same type of amateur standing in stage tonight.
Come on, give me a hug. Give me a hug just like you did to Obama.
The same type of amateur.
And you'll help elect me just like you did to Obama, too. Give me that
the same
hug,
type of amateur.
Hold on. Governor Haley, would you like to respond? Are you bought and paid for?
What I would like to say is the fact that I think this is exactly why Margaret Thatcher said, if you want something said, ask a man. If you want something done, ask a woman. First of all, we do care about clean air, clean water. We want to see that taken care of, but there's a right way to do it. And the right way to do it is, first of all, yes, is climate change real? Yes, it is. But if you want to go and really change the environment, then we need to start telling China and India that they have to lower their emissions.
That was the former U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, Nikki Haley, who was the South Carolina governor. John Nichols, very quickly before we move on to foreign policy.
Sure. Look, we saw peak climate denial in a Republican debate, and it's kind of amazing at this late stage in history that it was, A, stated, and B, even on the candidates who weren't quite as aggressive as Ramaswamy, there was avoidance. And you noticed that in that clip you played, the candidates immediately tried to go off to other topics, to talk about whether they were bought and paid for, to talk about China, to talk about Russia, rather than to focus in on the issue that was raised. And I think this sums up the Republican Party at this point. The moderate position in the Republican Party is avoidance, but I think a very strong position, as you know, a very popular position within the party, is one of actual denial. And you saw a candidate on stage go full board on that, which was quite remarkable, especially on a day when literally the heat index was 114 degrees in Milwaukee.
Well, Republican candidates were also asked about the war in Ukraine. This is debate moderator Brett Baer of Fox News.
Mr. Ramaswamy, you would not support an increase of funding to Ukraine.
I would not. And I think that this is disastrous, that we are protecting against an invasion across somebody else's border when we should use those same military resources to prevent across the invasion of our own southern border here in the United States of America. We are driving Russia further into China's hands. The Russia-China alliance is the single greatest threat we face. And I find it offensive that we have professional politicians on the stage that will make a pilgrimage to Kyiv, to their Pope, Zelensky, without doing the same thing for people in Maui or the south side of Chicago Kensington. I think that we have to put the interests of Americans first. Secure our own border instead of somebody else's.
A win for Russia is a win for China. We have to know that. Ukraine is the first line of defense for us. And the problem that Vivek doesn't understand is he wants to hand Ukraine to Russia. He wants to let China eat Taiwan. He wants to go and stop funding Israel. You don't do that to friends. What you do instead is you have the backs of your friends. Ukraine is a front line of defense. Putin has said, once Russia takes Ukraine, Poland and the Baltics are next. That's a world war. We're trying to prevent war. Look at what Putin did today. He killed Prigozhin. When I was at the UN, the Russian ambassador suddenly died. This guy is a murderer, and you are choosing a murderer over a pro-American country.
First of all, Mr. Ramaswamy, you have 30 seconds. Mr. DeSantis,
I wish you well in your future career on the boards of Lockheed and Raytheon.
Yeah, I'm not on
but the fact of the matter,
Raytheon, and you know,
Boeing came off of it, but you've been pushing this lie.
You want to go and defund Israel?
Okay, let me address that. I'm glad you brought that up.
I'm going
to address each of those right now. This is the false lies of a professional politician. There you have it.
Foreign policy experience, and it shows.
And you know what?
You were mentioned in the territorial dispute.
It's not a territorial dispute either.
As President of the United States, your first obligation is to defend our country and its people. And that means you're sending all this money, but you're not doing what we need to do to secure our own border. We have tens of thousands of people who are being killed because, we're not handling both. And so I am going to declare it a national emergency. I'm not going to send troops to Ukraine, but I am going to send them to our southern border. When these drug pushers are bringing fentanyl across the border, that's going to be the last thing they do. We're going to use force, and we're going to leave them stone cold dead.
So that was Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, before that former U.N. Ambassador Nikki Haley, and also Vivek Ramaswamy. John Nichols, your response.
It was a remarkable exchange. You could write books about that, just those few minutes there. And in doing so, get a pretty good insight to where the Republican Party is. You clearly saw the America First position that Donald Trump obviously articulated in many cases as president, but even taken to greater extremes by Ramaswamy and to a lesser extent by DeSantis. But what was fascinating in that exchange was the extent to which Nikki Haley really emerged as, I think, one of the most effective communicators on the stage and one of the most aggressive communicators. She's nowhere near the others in the polls. She's got a long way to go, but she's clearly doing a better job, frankly, than some of the other candidates who are attempting to distinguish themselves in putting herself out there. And you saw the crowd's reaction to her. But what was fascinating was the extent to which Ramaswamy refused to back down. In fact, he actually, as you noted in that clip, suggested that Haley was really trying out for a place on the board of some defense contractor. It was a very aggressive hit, and one that I think was notable because it gets to, I think, a lot of the deep divisions within the Republican Party about foreign policy. I wish that the moderators had really played this out a little more and given more time to a deeper investigation of this. And I think it's especially notable that DeSantis was desperately trying to get into the discussion, but came in not with particularly deep insights, but just a repetition of talking points about the border.
John Nichols, I want to thank you for being with us, the nation's national affairs correspondent. We'll link to your latest piece, The Party of the Big Lie and the Even Bigger Lie. This all on the eve of President Trump turning himself in. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. Thanks for joining us.
The Vancouver Art Gallery presents the Vancouver-based artist Mary Corey's most recent work, I Love. in the gallery's first floor rotunda until November 19, 2023. Paying homage to the calligraphic nature of Arabic in her work, Corey draws inspiration from Henry Moore's sensuous sculptures in Zaha Hadid's organic architectural structures. To learn more about this exhibition, visit vanartgallery.bc.ca.